Good Sunday morning and welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton. And today is a busy day. It is All-Ireland Sunday and the minors get underway at 8.30 and then at 10.30 a.m. our time, 2.30 Irish time, Cork will meet Kerry in an All-Ireland final that is to be anticipated to be a tremendous game, and you can catch that live down at the Hart and Crown. So you still have time to get yourself, listen to the Gaelic Hour, get out of bed, head into the shower, head down, have breakfast, and catch Cork versus Kerry at the Hart and Crown in the market. And I want to express my gratitude to the Hart and Crown for their continued support of this programme and also to the Monterey Inn Resort. Before we get into today's show, and today we're going to meet Mick O'Connell from Valencia. And Mick O'Connell, of course, in Gaelic circles is known as probably the number one Gaelic footballer of the last century. He first appeared for Kerry in 1959 and then had a long career. But before we talk to Mick, I need to fill you in on what's coming up in the city. Don't forget, we have some competitions running on the website, and that's thegaelichour.ca. There are pair tickets for Tara Players, Noises, Women on the Verge of HRT, and that opens on October 1st. October 1, 2, 3, 4 at the Ottawa Little Theatre. There's also a pair of tickets going for Echoes of Erin, and Echoes of Erin is at Library and Archives Canada, the Auditorium on October 2nd. And you can get tickets for that at ticketweb.ca, or if you head down to the Celtic Festival at St. Bridget's this afternoon, you'll be able to pick tickets up down there for that also. And that's another thing that's going on starting at noon. There's a Celtic Festival today down at St. Bridget's, noon until 6. Lots of music, entertainment, and the Irish community will have the representatives from the various organisations. There's an Irish Language Weekend coming up in Armfriarn this coming weekend. That's Friday 25th to Sunday the 27th. And I see the Irish Society have a St. Patrick's Parade golf tournament on Wednesday the 30th at the Kingsway Golf Club in Chelsea. So plenty going on. There's an audition notice here for 7:30 Productions, and that is they're going to present Shining City by Conor McPherson, and that'll be directed by John P. Kelly. Those auditions will be held on Saturday, the 26th of September. I don't have a location, but if you drop me an email, austin@thegaelichour.ca, I can tell you where you can possibly go in between now and then. I'll pass it on to John P and he can get back to you. We also have a giveaway on the website for a DVD, The Great Irish Famine, and that's commemorating the famine celebrations that occurred in Skibbereen and also in Grosseal. But again, you have to go on the website for that, and you'll find their archives going back to 2005 when we started broadcasting. And there are the three competitions at the moment, the DVD and two tickets. But we're going to go straight to Valencia Island and talk to Mick O'Connell.
Anybody who has any connection with Gaelic football will know the name Mick O'Connell, because Mick O'Connell's name is synonymous with Gaelic football and is renowned in Ireland and outside of Ireland for a long number of years, probably at this stage close on over 50 years. And I'm now sitting in Valencia Island, on Valencia Island, looking out across the bay at Beganish, talking with Mick O'Connell. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour. Tafáilte roth.
Good morning, Austin. Good morning. Yeah, we're sitting here at the edge of northern edge of Valencia Island, looking across to Beganish Island and to Killeen in the background. The mountain is covered with mist today, but that will clear probably later. But yes, this is a very, very, very much a homeland to me, because my people came across from Beganish Island in 1933. The family lived there for thousands of years, I would say, since records were ever taken. But my father being a fisherman, and my mother being from the mainland opposite, he decided to come across here to Valencia, brought his eldest two daughters and son with him, and I was born here in Valencia Island afterwards. And there was a family of nine of us all together, and we lived here on the edge, looking out over Dingle Bay and the Blaskets and all that. So it was a lovely place, as I said, to grow up in, and I'm still here at 72 years of age now, and I count myself privileged to have lived in this place all my life.
Of course, when you grew up at that time, that was before the bridge, so it was very much an island.
It was a total island. The bridge was only built in 1971, and all trade with the mainland was via boat. Passengers, cattle, horses, everything was transported by boat from Valencia Island across to Renard Point. And there was another facility at that time. There was a railway line running right from Killarney right across the edge of the bay, mountains, tunnels, bridges, across rivers and so on, and a passenger rail service and freight service right down to the terminus at Valencia Harbour. That was a wonderful facility as well. So the island in my young days was a thriving spot to live in. In fact, it's excelled way beyond what the adjacent mainland had. We had the Western Union Telegraph headquarters here with a big staff here. Well, cable. We had the Lightkeeper's residences here for servicing the lighthouses off the coast, the Skelligs and Tirich lighthouses. We had the radio station, Valencia Radio, up on the northern shores. And all the other shops, facilities, two resident doctors. We still have a little village hospital, which is there since the 1800s. And various things, all the trades and so on. So the island was a lovely place to grow up in, and all the facilities there. So you never felt that you were deprived of anything by not being distanced from the mainland.
And of course, the cable that came in here, the other end of that cable was into Newfoundland in Canada.
That's true. In fact, I have a very great feeling for that. I worked with the cable company for 11 years myself, but my father, he piloted the cable ships that serviced all those cables. And the names of Halifax and Nova Scotia and St. John's, they rang off the people around here, and especially the seagoing people. And I can name some of the ships, the Lord Kelvin, the Cyrus Field in particular, come in here in the harbour in the war years in the 1940s. It was wonderful to go aboard those and to meet a lot of those people. And a very interesting thing, a couple of years ago, there was a nun who was a friend of my family, who saw after a mentally handicapped. She came on a visit to Ireland and had another Canadian from Newfoundland with her. And we had tea up at the Lighthouse Cafe on the northern shore. And we got talking. The nun who was visiting with our friend said, "My father worked on a cable ship called the Lord Kelvin." I said, "That's amazing. Just out in the bay in front of us there, my father piloted that cable ship, and your father worked on the same cable ship. And here the two of us meet here now, 60 years later." So, such is life. You mm-hmm. never know when you're going to come across somebody.
And I understand that some people from Newfoundland have settled, come across them at some time in history and settled here.
Well, they did come working through the cable company. There were some of the families working with the cable company. And in particular, one of the cable shipmen married an O'Neill girl from Renard Point as well. She went off to live in Newfoundland with them. I knew the family well. So That was another thing that made Valencia a thriving place in my youth. That you know, fishing was going pretty well at the time, mackerel fishing, and the shipping French boats, Spanish boats, southern Welsh boats came here, landed, and sheltering from the weather. So in a way, it was a lovely spot to grow up in.
So what was the population around that time, would you say?
Well, I don't have the official figures, but I can give the figures from the school. I think it was about 1,100, because in the national school, which I lived here, we had three schools on the island. There was 84 in the national school here. There was about 50 in the central school and about another 25 in the western school, which would be a cumulative number of around 150 children attending national schools. Now, the current population of one central school is just 50 plus. Right. So that gives an idea of the declining population here. But that is not alone typical of Valencia. Along the west coast generally, there's a move towards urbanisation, and that's a fact of life.
And as you said, because of the cable and because of the fishing and everything else, Valencia then would have been an economic powerhouse relative to an awful lot of other areas in Ireland.
As I said to you, away beyond a lot of the mainland places, which would economically be well ahead, because there's a great selection of monies through the employments given in those different places. The cable company and the Irish Lights and the radio people, allied to the local population. It was a lovely mix. In fact, there was just where we are speaking here now, there was a Protestant church which was full every Sunday, two Catholic churches. There were a great mix of cultures in that regard. That was enriching as well, which is something that a lot of other places had no experience in those years, way back when I was growing up in the 30s and 40s, of any outside cultural bit of a mix whatsoever.
So when you talk about cultural richness and a cultural mix, what would have been the weekend life, the social life, the cultural life that was vibrant at the time?
Well, we had a dance hall, a cinema here, and the dances were run twice weekly. So, the cinema ran twice a week as well. And also card playing and whist drives and various community events like that were very much. But people, because they were not mobilised, there was little motor car, people did intermeet very much. And everybody seemed to know each other. Some people were probably financially much better off because of good employment, Western Union in particular. But that didn't seem to cause any feeling of ill will towards them, because everyone lived off each other here. The turf men and the people supplying vegetables from the Western end of the island, employment then, ferrying cargoes across the ferry, because the cable company had their own powerhouse, engines, oil had to be transported, barrels, various activities like that. And that made the place quite vibrant. Looking back on it now, which today it has declined. Well, I suppose a lot of places, that type of life has changed very much.
And, of course, part of any cultural fabric would have been sport, which is where your name is known throughout Ireland and the world.
Yeah, well, I got to be known through Gaelic football. I played here in the island as a young lad. We played in the local sports field, watching local teams playing. T'was no ambition of any young lad here at that time that he would make any mark nationally. Just played it along, and it was like the summer's evening. It was our pastime in summer evenings, and in other times there was no such thing as coaching. People went just for a kick of football, just like they did, I think, in some of the great poems. I think the cricket men in England, they would play in the evening. I think there's Goldsmith wrote about that as well. And there was a great mix. Old and young just kicked football here. I happened to get a lucky break in 1955. I played with a local team, and I happened to come to the notice of the Kerry County team. And from that, I had no tradition. My people were seagoing people, and they had no tradition in sport. But it just happened that I liked it, and I think that's the only good reason one should be involved in sport. You either like it, and if you don't like it, you know, you shouldn't be at it. You should be at something else. When I hear people saying they make sacrifices for their sport, I cannot believe it, because people make sacrifices to make a living for their family and take great chances and make efforts and sacrifice a lot, maybe of their spare time, which would be maybe in many cases immigrating to make a living for their family or working long hours. But sport to me was what I call an escape from the hard grind of life, and you know, to fulfill and have a bit of friendship through it. So that was my attitude right through my playing days, and still is today. I could never, I was classed as a good footballer. I had the skills. Fielding and kicking was good in real football. But looking back on it, one of the things that I have looked back with satisfaction now is that I played the game very fairly. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't want to get the better of some competing players through foul means. So that is the one thing that I look back at now, that I can say at least I can class myself a sportsman.
We'll take a short break and play a piece of music. And
very
come
good,
back
after.
Is there anything in particular that you might like to have played? Any particular favourite piece of music of an Irish genre?
Well, I was a great McCormack. John McCormack, I think, was he was a great representative for Ireland, and I still think today his voice hasn't been surpassed by any tenor. Time.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chain 97.9 FM, and this is John McCormack, and we'll be back with you in a few moments.
Climb upon my knees, sonny boy. You are only three, sonny boy. You've no way of knowing, there's no way of showing what you mean to me. Sonny boy, when there are great skies, I don't mind the great skies. You make them blue, sonny boy. Friends may forsake me, let them all forsake me. You'll pull me through. and I know your worth. You made a heaven for me right here on earth. But if the angels grow lonely, take you, 'cause they're lonely. I'll follow.
Back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM, and we're chatting with Mick O'Connell, and we're sitting on Valentia Island. Mick, you were talking before we listened to John McCormack there about playing Gaelic and how it wasn't traditional in your family. When you were at school, was it part of the school system? Did you get to play there, and how was the school system?
Oh, the school system, well, it played out. We played amongst ourselves, made our own sport, and that was playing with a ball. We'd make our own games and so on, just as carefree as could be. And I think that was the reasons that I got to like it, because I was never forced to do anything, just to develop, challenge yourself to develop a skill, kick well with both legs. And that was something that, self-satisfying to say you could achieve that. But as regards school itself, the national school here, I always enjoyed my time there. The various teachers, and we had three teachers in the school which I went to here. It's closed down now, and there's a central school here. Spent several years there until I was 12 years of age. And then there was no secondary school in the island. So the number of people that wanted to go to secondary school, they got the bicycles, went across by boat and cycled to Castlemaine town, which is 3 miles away daily. Wind, rain, no matter where it was, sound wet sometimes. But of the number that went to national schools, a way less than half would go to secondary school, because the families would need them at home, and the future for them, for many of them, was immigration. Mm-hmm. They spend a couple of years at home, maybe doing helping around the farm or whatever was to be done, and then gradually follow their forebears across to, mainly to London at that time. Not too many, a handful went to America, all right, but mainly London. But in secondary school at that time, it was run by Christian Brothers. I know they get a lot of criticism nowadays, maybe because of the misbehaviour of a few, but they did provide a good secondary education, and it was up to you then to follow whatever after that. There was very little third level from my era, because there was no state support for it unless you lived in a university town. So some people might try and get a civil service job or pick up something from their results as after attending maybe 4 or 5 years in secondary school. But that is something that has changed a lot now. There's wonderful facilities now for any person. It is a pity then those that are very talented young people, boys and girls, who because of the facilities not being available and the lack of finance at home, that they never were able to follow on and pursue something in the academic line. A lot of them, unfortunately, had to just up and go away and try and scrape a living over in London.
So when you were growing up and at the school system at that stage, was Irish very much a predominant language, or was it something that was compulsory? Was that the period of time where it was predominantly English and Irish was compulsory in the schools?
Well, it was compulsory. I think that's not true to it, because every subject school was compulsory. maths, Irish, English, and whatever else we did. That would be the main subjects. But at this island, the western end of the island, there was a lot of Irish spoken there. But down here, because of the influence of jobs with cable companies and various things, English was vital to have in order to proceed and to make a living, say, dealing with shipping and so on. But I have very strong views on the language. My parents didn't have it, although their parents did have it before them. But I never heard any adverse comment from my parents at school. And it is only when I had children myself and went to school that I really got fluent in Irish, because of saying, I should have been better. I went through the books and could recite poetry and all that. But from a conversational point of view, I wouldn't be as fluent as I would like to be. So I didn't got into various things, the grammar and so on. And I said, you know, that it is one of the most satisfying things I did, because the spoken word is something that really keeps a language alive. There was too much emphasis on the books, and still is, I think, because the language, the Irish language, as distinct from English, which is the main language spoken here in Ireland, is very descriptive. All the place names and some of the terms in Irish are so true to take a whole sentence in England, in English, to translate one word in Irish and to give it meaning. So for that reason, I hope that the language survives. And there are great efforts made, but it takes the population in general, not alone the schools or the church or any other state. If the heart of the people is not in it, I don't think it will ever come to develop as it would be a living language, like it is in, like French is in France, and Spanish in Spain, and English in England. I would like to see it on a par with English here, that people would have it, but that's up to the people's attitude.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, like with Red in the Gaeltachta, and some of the recording artists now that are out there, modern recording artists, are recording in Irish, and it's beautiful. Leisharina na Conaille and Muirne Gowlif have some beautiful work, and it seems to be quite popular.
Yeah, Radio na Gaeltachta has popularised the language, because I think in the early 1970s, Radio na Gaeltachta was set up. Prior to that, it would be an occasional programme in Irish on RT Radio Éireann.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, you've got the Radio na Gaeltachta, and also the RT, which is the television. Television, a lot of the television has subtitles, and people read the subtitles. I think the radio is a better medium for promoting the language, but it is a help in that regard, and I hope that the Irish people eventually will realise that it's a wonderful treasure to have. And some of the great Celtic languages have been lost. I think the Scottish language, Manxmen, in my father's time, the Manxmen came in here fishing in a big way. The Manx language is almost extinct now. I think Cornish in the south of England is almost dead. And Irish will eventually go the same way, if, you know, there is still spoken strongly in many parts of Ireland, the way to the areas of the Dingle Peninsula and up in Connemara and Donegal. And it would need to be to spread a bit more than that to maintain.
Switching gears back to football. You said when you started out here you were fortunate enough, one of the Kerry scouts managed to see you perform on the field, and you got your opportunity on the Kerry team, and that lasted for a long number of years. How many years did you represent Kerry?
From 1955 to 1972. I was then going for 36 years of age. Were I professional, I could have continued more, because I kept myself fit all the time. And I enjoyed exercising, keep myself fit, but I was married then and I had a family to see after. And where I lived, it took a lot of travel to go to matches and so on. I mean, out here in the perimeter of the country. And I enjoyed the matches, now going away for a weekend. And our travel and costing it over paper, we're two amateur players. But it was a very nice pastime to have paid for, and to meet a lot of friends in all countries of Ireland. But it is something that life would have been different without it, and I got to know a lot of people through it, and it gave me an insight into sport in general. I've a great interest in sport, world sport, no matter what it is, and can understand them because the more you understand the sport, I think the more you can appreciate it. But also the trials and tribulations, that sportsmen have, when I see some of the monies they're making now, the business, some people might say, I wouldn't envy them at all, because it's a short term, a lot of them have. They might have to start life again maybe in the early 30s, and having spent the ages between 12 and 13, 30, totally in a very restricted environment, and having to be here, there and elsewhere, directed, and to start out life again. I think the amateur ethos is very good. I'm not saying it shouldn't be professional. The professions set a very high standard in performance. But on the other hand, you can have a very high standard of performance in an amateur and take it seriously and still treat it as a sport. But that's the way it is.
And when you say, as an amateur, like in your days when you played county football, you were living here in Valencia, and you'd probably have to make your way into Tralee or Killarney training.
Did a lot of the practice. I did a lot of my practice here on the island itself because that was of necessity. There wouldn't be a limited amount of organised training, because it would be too expensive in those times. But we brought my own gear, boots, my own boat for going across, and paid for my own travel sometimes. But generally, it didn't cost me very much. It was something. But there were a lot of handicaps up here, and I had kind of a reputation. Maybe that was given because of the unusuality of my location in Ireland. I don't think anyone else had been captain of a county winning All-Ireland team until I came along that time. Other players from other remote places did, but an island in particular was kind of unusual.
Right.
And a lot of attention was given to me for that regard, something which I disliked, because a player is a player no matter where he comes from a slum or a palace or an island. Mm-hmm. And tis the playing aspect that I enjoyed. And I disliked any other attention beyond let them comment about my play, but not about where I came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was something that I did dislike, but I had to suffer to a certain extent.
Now, in your playing career, what would you say was the high point? That when you look back and say, you know, that stands out?
Well, the point about it is... You see, Gaelic football is played at three different levels, very local and at intermediate level within the county, and then All-Ireland county, inter-county. So I got as much satisfaction in playing local, because what gave me satisfaction was my ability to play the ball. If high fielding was the highlight of my game, and if I caught a good ball, take a run and catch it here in Carstadine or Valencia or Croke Park in Dublin, it was the same feeling of satisfaction I get. Some people think that one would play for a claim, and because you play in a big game, you get maybe a write-up and so on. That's something that I always thought, that's something some media man mm-hmm. might write about. That goes away. But personal satisfaction of playing well, that's something that stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as I had some days when I didn't so well, but that is sports. It depends on what amount of practice you've put in and various things. But looking back in it, I suppose I was a bit mad to be trying to play serious football, living here in an island and going across, coming back in the middle of the night, bad weather. But I was young and it was my sport, so mm-hmm. it was no big deal. When I think of men coming down with cattle in the morning, going to Fair and Carstadine, and some southeasterly gale of wind blowing and trying to put cattle into boats, bring it across to the market, that was a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by comparison with what I was doing.
Right. Mick, we'll take another little break. And is there any other piece of music or nothing that you'd like to?
Well, I don't know. My father was when I was young growing up. He had a great man, the Stephen Foster numbers. I think it might have a Stephen Foster one. You know,
he wrote Hard Times.
Hard Times. That was. There were Hard Times long ago, and people didn't complain about it. They didn't say there were poverty.
That's
there.
Right.
So Hard Times. That's I've heard that people singing that.
That's right.
That's a good one too. So I'm doing the vocals now mainly. But if you have one of those, I'd like to listen to it.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on 1097.9 FM. This is Hard Times, and we will be back with you in a few minutes. We're chatting with Mick O'Connell.
Forever in our ears, oh, how
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour, and I'm chatting with Mick O'Connell here in Valencia. And since we started chatting, I noticed, Mick, that the mist has lifted over there, and we can see the head of the
Yeah, that's right. Often that's typical Irish weather. We're here in the month of August here now, and August can be a lovely month, but this year in particular it has been pretty wet. I have turf and the bogs out there ready to be saved, and I just have to be patient and wait. We will get it, and that's something you have to learn. In our young days growing up, trying to save the hay, bad weather and so on, you just have to wait until the weather comes, and that is something that you have to have patience with. And it is something, the heavy, foggy weather, it is a pity when tourists come to lovely outlying places, mountains and valleys and seascapes around here, that they don't see it as best in clear days. But if you wait around for a few days, you'll always get that fine day amongst the wet. And it is something to wonder. I lived here all my life, and I think I've travelled quite a bit. I've been down east to west coast of America, beautiful spots. They're beauty in many parts of the world. I've been in different places, nice climates and so on. But from scenery and variations, this part of Ireland, which I live here now, I'm probably biased. I wouldn't swap it for anywhere else.
When we talked about change and how things have changed in every way, Gaelic football has changed. There's been changes in rules, there's been changes in a variety of ways. Since television came along, it has been broadcast internationally. The attitude to sports have changed. How do you see all the changes?
Oh yeah, I suppose people are more commercially minded now. I'm all for sport, say professional and amateur. I think you cannot have any grey area in between. You're either professional, where everyone is on the same level and play professionally, and amateur should be kept amateur. That's right. But if you have a certain amount of professional playing against the two blue amateurs, it's not a level playing field. Nobody can say that's a fair play then. But you mentioned about Gaelic football. Now, the Gaelic football, which I grew up with in the 1940s and played through my own time, it consists of fielding the ball. That's being going to the air and catching it well, kicking well with both legs of hands on ground and kicking it fairly accurately. And that was the main course. And any else were trimmings. Trimmings now seem to be the main course at the present time. And I'm not condemning the players now, I'm talking about the game itself. Mm-hmm. The players now in Ireland are as dedicated as ever they were. They have the facilities. But the actual game itself is what I'm saying here is like chalk and cheese, really. Now, the trimmings, solo running and hand passing now seems to be the main course. And the other thing of good fielding and good kicking, long distance, short distance and so on, seems to be a side issue and is not promoted. And it is a pity, but the young boys growing up now don't see anything like the good feeling which I saw as a young boy growing up. And that was the thing that's really, I got my satisfaction, being able to field it well and kick it well. Now, I'm not saying the players, if they enjoy it nowadays, I don't think, were I a young boy nowadays, or a young boy growing up, I could be inspired by the game I see nowadays. But I'm speaking with an old head here in that regard. But there was a challenge in the old game. A ball delivered and to get up in the air and catch it was something that you would have to master with a lot of practice. Now, basketball is a game in itself. A lot of people would think that Gaelic football now resembles to a certain degree of basketball played in a field with grass. There's so much hand use of the ball, which I think is a dilution of the game. But it's something that I don't shout about it because I'm gone from the game since 1972. And it would appear like that I'm an old player extolling the values of my time. And it is the game I'm concerned about. I was never asked. I know I could write a set of rules that would have made it a decent game. But the thing about it, about sports, you know, a lot of people who have no vision, I see it in a lot of sports, who have no real practical idea of stating down what is practical and practicable that can be played properly and refereed very well, is not clearly stated. In fact, I hear a lot of comments about referees. To me, the referee should be almost incidental, backing down the scores, and play is done by the players. And a referee doesn't destroy a game. The players can only destroy a game by their tactics and foul play. And I think that there's often, when I hear comment about saying that the game was good, ruined by the referee because he used the whistle too much, that is because the players were not playing it properly, and so be it.
So with the changes that have occurred in the rules over the years, do you feel that it may have resulted in less attraction, or that, or is there as much of an attraction to kids growing up when they look at the selection that's out there now? Because particularly with television, where they've access to a variety of sports from a spectator perspective, and then be drawn into playing sport, is the game appealing to kids in the way that it is?
I only think my own locality. If it were not organised, my own locality now, a lot of people, I think, wouldn't be playing it. But it is promoted a lot. But if they were left to their own choice, a lot of other games give a better example of what good play is, and that's available through television and so on, which wasn't there in my time. So I don't think Gaelic as it played now does inspire a lot of people, but it is still going very strong because it's still being promoted. But a lot of young people, if they had the option, they see soccer played to a very high degree by professionals, no doubt, and rugby and various other sports. But I think if Gaelic was played to a high degree with definite skills, with less handball and less fouling, I think, because as an amateur sport, you can use the hands and you can kick with you're allowed to kick with both legs. Whereas in soccer, to use the foot well, you need to be full-time pro to play it to a very high degree of skill. But Gaelic would have the promise of having a very good example if it were played properly. But again, speaking to you here now, I'm reluctant to speak about the style of players there nowadays, because could only be saying that I'm comparing best. I'm not comparing the past to the present. I'm telling you about what the game is now. As you said to me there, I don't think on its own, without the promotion, that it would have as many playing it.
Now, yet at the other side of it is that the crowds that will go to a county championship, it still has a drawing power, and the numbers that are going to go up to Croke Park for the All-Ireland, where tickets are keenly sought, it still has a tremendous place in the Irish being.
Oh, it has, it has. The Gaelic legislation, it has done wonderful work. There's wonderful stadia, playing fields all over the country now. Nobody can fault the GAA in that regard. And people have the facilities to travel nowadays, which wasn't there away long, long ago. There is a great following for it. I think, I suppose it's still the main sports. Gaelic football is the main sport in Ireland. But I'd say that's a tradition as much as anything else. The tradition there, tradition doesn't die easily. And there's a great tradition of following the sport here in Kerry now. But as I said to you there, a lot of the older people of my vintage, when they're talking about, they go to games, but they say, "'Tis a pity that there isn't more of the old-style fielding and kicking it."
Right.
That's the other thing.
Is Sam Maguire coming back to Kerry this year?
Well, as we speak here now, there are four teams left: Kerry, Cork, Meath and Tyrone. And it looks like now it'll be probably Kerry and Tyrone again. Kerry has had a monopoly of it down through the years. And that is because it's the main sport here in Kerry. It's a fairly big county. But there's much between the Tyrone and the Kerry teams. But I think it'll fall between those. But the Sam Maguire, in my time, I had got to Sam Maguire, which was received in Croke Park in 1959. And that's the last time I handled it. I left it in the dressing room because I had to come down by train, come across in a boat that night. It was never in my house. And nowadays, they hawk it around in celebrations here and there. In old days, the game was over and that was that, as far as I was concerned. But different times have different practices, I suppose.
So do you think it's coming to Kerry or Tyrone then this year?
Well, to date, Kerry haven't been playing very well, but they played well against Dublin in a recent match, but I think Dublin were very poor. But last year there wasn't much between them, so I can't say. I have developed a new style of answering the question, who do you think will win the match next Sunday? Kerry or Tyrone? Well, I said, well, you know, either of the two teams could win it. It's a good answer, isn't it?
It is a good answer.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that.
Like, we'll play another piece of music before we wrap up. What would you like to hear?
Well, you're visiting Ireland here and you want to play some Irish music. I think the famous Sean O'Reilly, he did a style of Irish thing, the Irish music, which was very attractive. And give it a new status. Maybe a piece from Sean O'Reilly from his collection.
Excellent. You're listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour. We're chatting with Mick O'Connell here in Valencia. And Mick had, as he mentioned during the earlier part here when we were chatting, had a long career in Gaelic football. But as with all sports, as Mick mentioned as well, with professionals, a lot of them end their career when they're quite young and then have to get back into life and integrate back in. Mick, while football in Ireland is very much an amateur and was always amateur, your achievement on the football field provided you with a profile that people could relate to. You went into politics for a period of time.
Well, you said to me there about people getting back to life. That wasn't the professional sports.
Correct.
I said they have to integrate back into everyday life. But, I was a member of the Kerry County Council for 7 or 8 years back in the late 70s, early 80s. Well, I didn't regard it as politics. I regard it as representation of the local area from the South Kerry area here. A lot of people ask me, are my politics, was I Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, the two main parties in Ireland? Neither, I said. I'm independent of both. I will go according to what I think is the good policy. In fact, my interpretation of politics is policies for the common good of the people. And some people would interpret it as getting the better of the other side and getting into power. To me, power is good if you have strong views and what you think is in the best interest of the people. So I spent 8 years in the county council, which I met many prominent people who were in part of the national government as well. I enjoyed my time there. It was voluntary. There was no pay whatsoever. And I was a young man, married man, and I was doing fishing at the time. And when it came to re-election time, I just made a token effort. I didn't want to opt out with this. I just made a token effort. I didn't get re-elected. If I worked hard enough, when I say worked hard enough and played the system, I could have got elected. Mm. But it was a great experience for me. It gave me an insight into how the system operates. The county council system in Ireland, it deals with water, roads, sewage, planning, libraries, and a variety of things that affect people in their everyday life, which the national government doesn't, is much removed from that. Mm-hmm. And I found something about the media in this country. You're a media man yourself, but I was very critical, and I spoke to some of the editors. You not feel an obligation to inform the people as to what the policies are, instead of merely concentrating on the personality clashes and things like that. But unfortunately, that is what the people often want to read, something where there is maybe a personal altercation between a couple of members. But it gave me a vision, which I did as a layman before that, of how systems operate. And that is something that I think a lot of people would benefit if they thought of that and how the system operates and were informed. But generally, people don't seem to have that, and I would say, here in Ireland, I think it is changing a little now, but there's a multiplicity of parties turning up, because the two main parties are of almost similar policies, and that represents the mass of the Irish people. I enjoyed my time in that whatsoever, and I still have strong views politically, but obviously I'm not participating mm-hmm. now. But mm-hmm. with the economic state of the country now, which is in recession as a result of kind of reckless lending and false building boom, which has impoverished the country, and now we have to get down to it and try and get the country back in an even keel again, which will affect a lot of young people with mortgages and so on, and jobs being lost. I hope it does right itself shortly.
And on that note, we were chatting earlier, and you were asking me when I emigrated, and of course that was back in 1988, which was when there was an economic downturn. For the last number of years, not only was there an economic upsurge here, but there was population growth. And that also has come to a sudden halt, to the point that Irish are having to emigrate again.
Yeah, it is. It is, and that I thought that was false, because the people, especially the young people, were led to think that things were flowing easily. A lot of the money was borrowed from abroad. And the term was used, the Celtic Tiger. I never used it. I think it was false. It was something that was concocted in order to give the impression that the country was booming. It was booming with the import of loans from abroad, given for needless surplus development. And it's left the whole population of Ireland now in the position that we all expected to bail out the banks, which have doled out this money. And I only hope that it does straighten itself pretty quickly, and that there is a return to something such as symbolism normality here, because people say there's a world recession, but this is a small island country here off the coast of Europe, and things need to be done very, very well here for us to survive in the world system as it operates. And that didn't happen in the last number of years, unfortunately.
And what's your sense that, do you have some degree of hope that within the next 4 to 5 years things may come back to some degree of sustainability?
I'm sure they will, because this has brought us home that very, very rapidly and very, very startlingly that what was going on all along was wrong, and there was no proper regulation, and now at last, when it does get right again, which I hope in a short time it does, that the likes of this collapse will never happen again.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, let's wrap up here. We're coming to the end of the time, and I'm sure that you would encourage anybody who's listening, should they come to Ireland, to come down and visit here in Valencia and enjoy the scenery that we're looking at now?
Oh, yes, yes. I think it's a lovely part of the country, the West Coast in particular. There's some lovely lands and nice scenes in the middle parts of Ireland. All parts of Ireland, I think there's, when I'm driving along, I love looking at the different parts of Ireland, the fertile lands and the coastal lands. And there's a great mix. You haven't far to travel to get nice scenery in any part of Ireland. And I think anyone who comes here and gets fair weather and stay for a while, they're bound to get some nice days. I think it's still a great old country, this.
Well, Mick, I want to say thanks a million for taking the time and sharing with me, and I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Austin. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton on this Sunday morning. And don't forget, still time to get down to the Heart and Crown and catch the All-Ireland Final between Cork and Kerry. And I'm looking forward to going in and sitting in through that. And I can't tell you who I'm going to be cheering for, but I know Mary will be cheering for Cork. Do come back tomorrow night and join us for an evening of music at 10 p.m. This programme is brought to you in part by the generous support that we receive from the Heart and Crown, and also from the Monterey Inn Resort. If you feel like brunch later on in the day, you can head to the Heart and Crown on Preston Street or to the Monterey Inn on Prince of Wales Drive. Also, don't forget, noon, down at St. Bridget's, we have the Celtic Festival. I'll be down there and looking forward to see you. So until then, and until tomorrow night, this is Austin Camerton saying thank you to Dave on the other side of the glass and to you, the listener, until tomorrow night. Slán go fóill.